This podcast sponsored by Cherry Hill Volvo.
At Cherry Hill Volvo, we have absolutely incredible offers, and a plethora of both new and certified Volvos from which to choose. Join Cherry Hill Volvo for the pricing and attention you deserve. I am Judith Krupnik, president of Cherry Hill Volvo.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Cherry Hill Volvo is honored to sponsor the Rich Zeoli podcast. We thank Rich for informing and entertaining all of us. Rich Zeoli, 1210 Talk Radio and Cherry Hill Volvo, an absolutely amazing team.
Now, 60 minutes of nonstop talk on the Rich Zeoli podcast.
Well, the United States Senate committee is going after the swamp, the corruption. Sally Yates was there. What did we learn this week about the Obama administration's efforts to spy on the Trump campaign? Welcome back to the show. Glad you're here. The Zeoli Show on Twitter at Rich Zeoli and Facebook.com/Zeoli Show, 855-839-1210. Happy Friday. I want to welcome back to the show. Andrew C. McCarthy is a senior fellow at the National Review Institute and National Review contributing editor, author of Ball of Collusion, The Plot to Rig an Election and Destroy a Presidency. And of course, you see him on Fox News all the time. Andy McCarthy, welcome back, my friend. Thanks for making the time today.
Rich, it's my pleasure.
You wrote recently about Sally Yates, and I really love the way you ended your piece. You said, it's really not hard to see whose side she's on.
Well, I don't think it ever has been. I didn't think, Rich, that we'd learn much from her testimony, because it's just a fact of life that once somebody has testified a number of times and been interviewed a number of times by either law enforcement or Congress on a set of events, that story is not really going to change, because if it does, the person's going to have, you know, potential problems, since those statements were all given under oath. So, you know, there are a few nuggets, I suppose, but for the most part, we already knew what her story was. And it seems to me that what I think was always going on here was they were trying to lay the groundwork to continue the Trump-Russia investigation into Trump's presidency. The only way they could possibly have hoped to pull that off was to have the cooperation of the Justice Department and the FBI. And Sally Yates and Jim Comey, who was then the director of the FBI — Yates was the acting attorney general by the time the administrations changed — they were the two officials who were going to continue into the next administration. So, you know, it just, the idea of trying to kind of paint her as if she was kind of an outsider who was duped, to me, is not just very — it's not very compelling. She's not, you know, she may not have been the main player here, but I don't think they could have planned this without her.
Yeah, and I think that's a very good point. And she looks back in hindsight with regards to these FISA warrants. And I really like the exchange with Senator Mike Lee, where, you know, he was pushing on the fact that procedure wasn't followed. I like when the senators push back on the idea that, you know, she says now, in hindsight, she wouldn't have signed those FISA warrant applications. She wouldn't have agreed to them. It really shows how the government just did not do the due diligence that's required in order for Americans to have due process here. And I would think, you know, when you're going to start spying on Americans through the FISA court, we got to have higher standards than this in the future, right?
Well, it depends on whether you think that's what happened or whether you think that's their story. I mean,
right.
You know, I have to say, I worked in a very busy, prominent U.S. attorney's office for 20 years, and I've been thinking about, like, what would the conversations be like inside the office? You know, Andy, who are you getting a warrant on today? Oh, I think we're going to get a wiretap warrant on the President of the United States, or at least on his campaign. And our theory is going to be that Donald Trump and his campaign are actually a Russian mole. They're actually a plant who ultimately are hoping to get into the Oval Office so that they can do the Kremlin's bidding from the highest office in the land. So I tell that to the U.S. attorney, and then what do I get back? Well, make sure your probable cause showing strong, and good luck with that. I don't think that's how the conversation would go. It would be, you're going to do what? And I would have to go through every single nook and cranny of my evidence and why I would dare to make that kind of a stunning allegation. The point being, it's simply not the kind of thing where you say, as Sally Yates says, and as other people who've gotten caught in this thing say, well, you know, look, I was six or seven or eight rungs above the people who were doing the on-the-ground work here, and the statute merely has me sign off because we have to make sure that all the legal requirements of FISA have been met. Investigating the president of the United States or a guy who's running for president of the United States, I was going to say that's a big deal. I can't think of a bigger deal, especially when you think about the fact that you're in the executive branch and you're in the Justice Department, which is run by the president. There's a lot of not only it's not only the kind of thing that ought to get a lot of attention. There's a lot of risk in it for the people who are doing the investigation. Personally, politically, professionally. So the idea that, you know, these guys just, the people in positions like Sally Yates just said, yeah, you know, I'm not here. We depend on the FBI to get the facts on these things right. It's not my job to double check their factual showing. But I'll be happy to put my name on something that says we're investigating the president on the theory that he's a Russian mole. I just don't think that's how those conversations go.
Yeah, that's such a great point. I mean, you know, and you were there in the Southern District of New York, so you sat around those lunch tables and had conversations like that, Andy McCarthy. So that's why it's so great to get your perspective. What do we know? What have we learned about President Obama's involvement in all of this?
Well, you know, I think you have to start from the framework of the fact that this was mainly, essentially, a counterintelligence investigation. I mean, we now that we're seeing the documentation, we see that they always covered themselves by saying they had a criminal angle, too, by putting in this cockamamie, you know, they might have failed to register as a foreign agent thing. You know, they're clandestine agents of Russia who were investigating for you know, possible subterfuge that they're plotting against the United States, but we want to make sure we have a criminal angle too. So let's say that they hadn't registered as foreign agents, even though that statute had been, I think it had been enforced six times in the 50 years before Mueller's investigation. So it really was not, it's not exactly that you're, that's not the crime of the century. Right. This was really a counterintelligence investigation. The reason I stress that, Rich, is counterintelligence investigations are done for the president. You know, criminal investigations, the reason we draw this distinction is because criminal investigations are done to vindicate the rule of law in court proceedings. And they are done under statutes that, you know, criminal statutes that Congress has enacted, and they're done with the supervision of the court. And for that reason, we don't want political interference in those. And to the extent that people have made a big deal about saying, you know, we shouldn't have the president and the political people at the White House getting involved in criminal investigations, that's a fair point. Counterintelligence investigations, on the other hand, are done for the president. They're the sort of things that are, they're not only run by the executive branch and done for the executive branch rather than for the court, they generate the kind of information that you find in the president's daily briefing report, right? So the point is, this investigation was not a law enforcement investigation. This investigation was an intelligence investigation. It was being done for the president. And the thought that because it was so important that Obama either didn't know about it or that it could have gone on without his approval of it is, to my mind, ridiculous. So you have that as your, you know, your framework. And then, you know, everybody points to, I think, appropriately, that we have this January 5th meeting at the Oval Office where they discuss withholding information from the incoming Trump team. And what they're obviously talking about withholding is the details of the Trump-Russia investigation. I think it's very telling that it's completely matter of fact that they had that meeting at the Oval Office. because everybody who was involved in it understood that this was being done with Obama's blessing, and there were things that needed to be decided because Trump was coming into office in 2 weeks. So, you know, they had to decide things like Comey was on his way up to brief Trump at Trump Tower the next day. So they had to talk about, what are you going to tell him? And as we now know, when he went up there, he told him about the P tape, right? But he didn't tell him about the details. He didn't say, oh, and by the way, Mr. President-elect, we're in the FISA court now, and we're going back next week to get warrants to spy on your campaign because we have a theory that you're involved in Russia's cyber espionage operations against the election. You know, he left that part out. And I think what they recognized that they couldn't share those details and hope to continue this investigation. And then, to my mind, I think it's very telling that the two officials who got sidelined here were Mike Flynn, who was the incoming national security advisor, and Jeff Sessions, who was the incoming attorney general. As I said with Yates a few minutes ago, these are the kind of officials who either would have been key to continuing the investigation or they would have been in a position to stop it. You know, they would have been in a position to understand exactly what the FBI was doing and inform the White House fully. And as you can tell from that January 5th meeting, they understood that if they had any hope of continuing this investigation, they had to keep the details of it from Trump.
Right. You have such a great way, Andy McCarthy, of making this understandable to the layman who doesn't understand the nuances of the law and the differences in statutes and that sort of thing. And I appreciate that because a lot of times with all this stuff, it can be very easy to just sort of gloss your eyes over it. And I think it's incredibly important that this never happens again in American history, because we can't be a republic if we have a police state. And by police state, of course, the government using law enforcement and intelligence for political purposes. And your piece at National Review, I want to ask you about this. You say neither Trump nor his campaign ever got a defensive briefing. And you say this should finally put to rest this absurd claim. What do you mean by that?
Well, Trump did get a briefing, and the Democrats know that. So they have said repeatedly that this was a defensive briefing. And just so your listeners understand, a defensive briefing would have been if they had gone into the Trump campaign, which even if they didn't like Trump himself, Rich, they had, you know, Rudy Giuliani, Chris Christie, Jeff Sessions on that campaign. All of them had been former United States attorneys. All of them had impeccable national security credentials. What you would normally do in a situation like this, if their story that they're telling now is true, which is that, no, we weren't worried about Trump. It was just a few bad apples like George Papadopoulos who were, you know, around his campaign. That was the problem here. Well, if that were the problem, it would be very simple. The FBI would go into the Trump campaign and say, look, you know, we think that you're being infiltrated by Russia. Here's the problem. They would have given him a few details, and then they would have purged the bad apples, right?
Yeah.
So when would you not do that? Well, you don't do a defensive briefing when the main offender is, or the main guy that is your target, is the candidate. If you think the candidate is the Russian mole, there's no point in doing a defensive briefing, because a defensive briefing is for the people who are in danger. It's not for the people who are causing the danger, right? And their theory was that Trump was the one who was in cahoots with the Kremlin. So I think that it's very important that people realize they didn't get a defensive briefing. And why wouldn't they have gotten a defensive briefing? They didn't get a defensive briefing because Trump was the main target. And that puts the lie to the story that they have been telling since they got caught, which was, no, we weren't investigating Trump. We weren't investigating his campaign. We were just investigating George Papadopoulos. So we moved heaven and earth. We did all these things. We brought all these foreign intelligence services into the mix. We trotted around the world to do intelligence operations. We used informants. We invoked FISA for George Papadopoulos and Carter Page. I mean, really?
Right.
Really? You know, so clearly Trump was the target here. And everything, once you understand that Trump is the target, then everything they did makes perfect sense. including not giving a defensive briefing. If you take their theory as true, giving the Trump campaign a defensive briefing would be like giving the Kremlin a defensive briefing and tell them they better be careful about, Ukraine, when the problem is the Kremlin.
Right.
I think it's important that people know that when the Democrats say Trump got a defensive briefing, you have to say to yourself, well, why would they lie about that? Because that's if we now look at the paper trail, it's clear he didn't get one. The briefing he got was a standard briefing that they give to the candidate who, if you have a non-incumbent candidate from either party, the National Intelligence Director and the FBI give them a briefing after they win the nomination. Hillary Clinton got one too in 2016, and it's a standard counterintelligence and security briefing that familiarizes the candidate with the threat environment that the United States faces in the world. That is not a defensive briefing where you go in and tell the Trump campaign you think they're being infiltrated by Russian clandestine agents. So you have to ask yourself, why are the Democrats and the people who are kind of shills for the FBI, why are they trying to mislead people into thinking that was a defensive briefing? And I think the answer to that is because they know the lack of a defensive briefing shows that Donald Trump was the target, which means what these guys did was a Watergate-level political spying operation.
It's amazing. Amazing. Fascinating. Really, truly fascinating, terrifying at the same time. And we got to make sure this never happens again in American history. Andy McCarthy, thanks for being so generous with your time. We appreciate it because you're always in high demand. But, your ability to break it down is brilliant. And we appreciate it because for a lot of us, we look at this stuff and we want to understand the nuance of this. And the nuance is everything. And you make it easy for us to understand. I will post a link to your latest piece at National Review. Andy McCarthy, have a great weekend, my friend.
You too, Rich. Thanks so much.
The Rich Zeoli Show on your schedule. This is the Zeoli Show podcast.
All right. So first of all, I want to say, as we this program is all about relationships and friendship. And there's nothing that makes me happier when members of the Zeoli Army become friends together. And that just means everything. I love that. It's fantastic. And I think it's great. We've got great friends on the show, Twitter, Facebook. I used to be better about interacting on social media. It's just nowadays, it's with the baby and everything else. It's just harder and harder. But I do want to give a shout out to Amy, Mrs. Deplorable at A Game Wins, because her family's going through some stuff and her dad is going through some stuff. And, I just want to say we'll send you some prayers and some positive energy your way. And, hopefully this will be something that goes okay for you. And thanks for being a great friend, Amy, to the show. And we appreciate that very much. And we'll keep you and your family in our thoughts this weekend for sure. I also want to say, too, next week I'll be off, but don't worry about that because we're going to have some great guest hosts for you, and Stocker will be here as well. One of the amazing things about this show is that we'll do things when I'm gone, like water tasting.
No, that's
things
not
like
happening.
That happens on this program, and
it's not
it
happening.
Makes
it's
radio
not.
Gold. We got a Marconi for that water testing that
we
Dr.
Did.
Maz did that
we
time
did.
He guest hosted.
Yep,
amazing.
We did, and we never went back to it again, which was a shame.
Which is a shame because truly, had we just done more water tastings, we probably would be nationally syndicated right now.
True.
People
it's
ask
true.
Me, Rich, why have you not gone national? And the reason why is we just don't do enough water tastings. I was on my vacation and I get, I check Twitter, big mistake. I see, why the hell are they doing water tastings on the Zeoli show right now? And I go, what is happening on this program in my absence? Now, other hosts, Bill, as you understand, would have jumped on the air at that moment and taken over. I refused to do that. I wanted this train wreck to play out. So what I found was that Maz had set up water bottles in the studio and had Dawn and Greg do a blind taste test of bottled water. Am I setting the stage correctly on this?
You are. Well, I mean, yes, you are, because Dawn said that she could tell the difference between water brands.
Right. And Maz thought, great radio, let's have her taste
I love Maz.
Water
I love Maz. Yes.
And then discuss the nuances of the water. you know, whether or not it's oaky or smoky, whether there's a lot of tannins on it. It's freaking water. So he did this, and how long did this segment last?
We were in afternoons then, so I think it was, I think it may have been a half hour.
Half hour. half hour of radio.
Yes.
And it was so bad that you had to tune in because you kept going, this can't be real, right? We can't really be figuring out whether or not she knows the difference between Poland Spring or Avion. Like, this can't be real right now, can it?
By the way, for people waiting on the edge of their seat to know, she could not tell the difference, by the way.
Of course not.
By the way, nobody wanted to know. Nobody needed to know that. Nobody, that mystery could have just left, it just been out there. Of course, Dr. Maz, the CEO of Cooper University Hospital, will be here next week as one of the guest hosts. And Greg, I'm telling you right now, if he does a water tasting, you shut it down. Bill, shut it down. Kill his mic, whatever you got to do. Shut it down.
I'm the boss now, so I will decide what we do.
Listen to this. Whoa. Listen to Darth Stalker over here. His conversion to the dark side is fully complete, Bill.
Yep, it's over.
It's over. That's him. It. Eskin got his way with his young apprentice.
Darth Eskin, you got him.
He got him. He turned now. Mostly machine now, Stalker. You're mostly machine. Fine. Do whatever you got to do. What the hell do I care? 855-839-1210 is the number if you want to weigh in on all these issues of the day today, the various issues that we're discussing. I'm also going to mention to you that we've got great sponsors on the program as well. And Newsmax TV has you covered for conservative news. They are America's fastest growing cable news channel in the country right now. And listeners are tuning into Newsmax TV and they really like it. And Blitz author David Horowitz is on Newsmax TV, America's fastest growing cable news channel. Blitz has just hit 5 weeks on the New York Times bestseller list. That's right. President Trump tweeted that Blitz was a hot book. Mike Huckabee says if every American read Blitz, Trump would win in a landslide. Blitz is now at bookstores everywhere. Or check out Newsmax's free offer for Blitz. Get it and save $28. Just call 800-NEWSMAX. That's 800-NEWSMAX. Or go to Blitz 411. Everybody's talking about Newsmax TV. You have it. DirecTV Channel 349. Dish 216. Sling. Fubo. Xfinity 1515. T-Vision 152. And more. Check your cable guide. And if you don't get it, call up and say, I want my Newsmax TV. Because it's real news for real people.
Thanks for taking the Zeoli Show with you. Rich Zeoli. Weekday mornings on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
All right. I love politics, as you know. It's my sports. I love to follow politics, and I think it's really fun. I am not predicting that Joe Biden's going to pick Michelle Obama as his vice president because I don't know enough to predict that. I'm just going to say this. It seems to me like Michelle Obama has suddenly become very, very political. She came out the other day and she said, look, here's the thing, all right? And I know that, like, Susie's on Twitter is going to come out and try to shut me down and silence me and tell me that I'm crazy and there's no way Michelle's running and she just wants to live her life and go to be a mom. And listen, here's the deal. The fact is that something's up here, all right? Something's going on. I'm not saying it's Michelle Obama necessarily, but something's up. And their candidate is a disaster, and he's not going to be president. If he is elected, he's not going to be president long. And I think you and I can agree on that fact. We are not talking about John F. Kennedy here, all right? The Democrats have a problem, and we have to understand they might be up to something. So the best thing you can ever do is to figure out and try to anticipate your enemy's moves. If you don't, well, then you just get caught off guard. So it's going to be a situation where when he doesn't pick Michelle Obama, I'll get 500 tweets. Hey, you were wrong. Your prediction didn't come true because I'm not predicting it. But if you think about it and you're prepared for it and it does happen on the off chance it happens, well, then you're ready for it. All I'm saying to you is something's going on. And the former first lady has gotten very political in the last week or so. She has her podcast now, and she went on her podcast the other day and she starts talking about she's got low grade depression. Somebody asked me on Twitter, you know, is this a Muskie moment? Muskie was running for president. He was, you know, had this moment in New Hampshire. He starts crying and revealed that he's on antidepressants. And no, it's not. Because from Michelle Obama, this is a if you heard it, what she said was she has low grade depression because of Donald Trump. She has Trump derangement syndrome is what she has. And every day she wakes up with the hypocrisy of this administration and then another black man being killed. And it's depressing her. It's a It's a call to the suburban moms who are also suffering from low-grade depression, who are drinking Chablis all day in the middle of the day, to say, hey, you're not alone. I'm with you. I connect with you. Because the fact is, she didn't say, you know, I've got depression. I've got to be institutionalized. I'm on antidepressants now. I've got to be medicated. She made it about Trump. And so she can turn around and go, and I got to do something about it, because I think a lot of people feel the same way. So I'm going to do blank. I think that's the ultimate little setup there. This confession was not a way to end her political career. I think it was anything. It was to make her so relatable and understandable, because all these moms, they've got this low-grade depression too, as they're dealing with their kids at home, and they're dealing with this COVID thing, and, you know, maybe they're drinking a little too much wine in the middle of the day, and, you know, something's going on here. I'm telling you right now, something's up. This is Michelle Obama on her podcast discussing the opportunity coronavirus has now. Cut number three.
Yes, essential work, and I struggle with it because I'm not sure that we treat them like they're essential.
And that's something that we need to, that's a part of that reflection that we need to do, you know, with ourselves and as a community. And we have to think about that in terms of how wealth is distributed. You know, how these essential people are supported, and what does that mean?
So I have another theory. If she's picked, and I'm not saying she's going to be, but if she were to be picked, the way that she talks about how wealth is distributed, that's for the progressive kooks, so that they know that she's, that's a little dog whistle to them, so to speak. You know, like, hey, look, she's talking about redistribution of wealth. She's okay. She's okay. It's all right. Bernie people, listen up. I know you want Elizabeth Warren, but she's okay. She's for wealth redistribution. Stocker, am I crazy? Maybe I'm crazy. I might be crazy, right? It's possible.
I mean, it's a theory. I mean, I'm not saying that she's not going. I don't know. I just can't see. I don't know. I don't think she's
going to run. You don't see it.
I don't.
But if it did happen, you'd go, well, that now it would be right?
I wouldn't be shocked if.
Like, if it did happen, you'd connect all these dots and go, oh, well, clearly this was right in front of us the whole time.
Yeah, she has a podcast that, by the way, is awful quality. Every time I pull a audio clip from her podcast, it is awful quality, and I have to enhance the audio about 100 times.
Oh, I didn't know Bill was producing that show. Bill, good job that you're producing for Michelle Obama on the side. That's great.
I'm getting both ends of the aisle on radio now.
you're destroying audio quality everywhere. It's amazing. It's great work.
But no, she has this podcast, and she has been more vocal in the past, I would say maybe 2 months, giving her political beliefs and opinions when we really haven't heard from her in the last few years. So, yeah, no, I understand what you're saying. I just think it's a long shot.
I agree. It's a long shot. It's probably not going to happen. But if it does happen, everybody will go, oh, well, duh. It was like right in front of us. It's going to be this scene at the end of The Usual Suspects. I need to do this. Okay, if you've never seen The Usual Suspects, I gotta say, spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert.
Then again,
alert,
that movie is like 40 years old now. So what the hell are you waiting for?
Yeah, something.
But at the end of that movie, when he's revealed to be Kaiser Soze, you go, oh, duh, it was right in front of me the whole time, right?
Of course, yes. With
that's what I mean. If you, it's like Fight Club, the end of Fight Club. You go, well, of course he's not real. Now I see it. Now it all makes sense.
Now you did this. Now, like, you ruined Fight Club now, too.
Well, listen, these movies are how old? How long do I got to go before I ruin a movie? These movies have been out for decades.
Yesterday, you ruined Titanic.
I know. I did ruin Titanic. People did not know the boat sank, and I apologize for that. I've been very, very apologetic about that.
Yes.
But I'm just saying, you know, when these movies happen, like whether it's The Sixth Sense, like you watch The Sixth Sense and you go, duh, it was right in front of my face the whole time, right?
Yep.
I ruined that movie now, too. The movie came out 37 years ago. If you have not seen it by now, this is not my problem. Plus, I gave you spoiler alert, right?
Yes.
Let me tell you the story that Maz and his buddies were going to see The Sixth Sense. And so they were in line for the movie. And this was when nobody knew the ending, you know, the spoiler ending. And this is also back when M. Night Shyamalan was like good, you know, and he like made good movies back then. And so they're all in line to get into the movie theater. And Maz and his buddies come walking out. And they're talking to one of the guys who's waiting online. And his friend, as they're leaving, goes, enjoy the movie. It's great. By the way, he's dead. And they just keep walking. They ruined the movie before they walked in. I think that's unacceptable.
That is 100% unacceptable.
Yeah, unacceptable.
He should have been tarred and feathered for that, honestly.
I agree. That's a capital offense right there, in my opinion. You know what
I
mean?
Agreed.
Again, I'm not predicting. I'm just saying that if it happens, it's going to be that Kaiser Soze reveal moment at the end of Usual Suspects where you go, obviously, duh, now I feel like an idiot. I didn't see this coming. So I'm just there to help you if, in fact, she is revealed to be Kaiser Soze. Because I kind of feel like the Obamas are like Kaiser Soze right now. I'm just saying.
All of a sudden, the limp, you know, she starts walking correctly. You're like, oh, of course.
Yeah. Oh, the low-grade depression. Duh, obviously. Right. Yeah. You know. What was it? The barbershop quartet or something like that? Come on, man. Yeah. Anyway, I do find the whole thing to be very, very interesting. Over at National Review, again, there's a piece that Rich Lowry, the editor over there, has. It's a Kamala Harris and Joe Biden's authoritarian VP finalist. This is great. You know, Kamala Harris, her attitude toward executive power is characteristic of the progressive mind. Last year, Senator Kamala Harris may have become the first presidential candidate in history to laugh derisively at the idea that the Constitution limits what a president can do. When former Vice President Joe Biden said that her plan for gun control by executive fiat didn't pass constitutional muster, she scoffed and deployed one of her canned one-liners. I would just say, hey, Joe, instead of saying no, we can't, let's just say, yes, we can. And then started laughing and everybody started cheering. And Joe Biden was going, you can't do that way. You can't do it that way. Because Kamala Harris, in her flippant little shrug of the United States Constitution right there, one of the Democrat great enthusiasts for unilateral executive authority and paid no price for it in her campaign whatsoever. Her presidential bid stalled out for her lack of a message and authenticity, not for her lack of constitutional scruple. In fact, her rejoinder to Biden in the debate got applause. And now, if the reporting is to be believed, is a finalist to join the Biden ticket. If Democrats haven't been scared straight about the perils of an overwhelming presidency during the Trump years, they never will be. President Donald Trump's bark has been worse than his bite, but even floating the idea of delaying the election or signing sweeping executive orders on immigration and health care as a substitute for congressional action is bad enough, he writes. He's actually circumvented Congress in other ways, most dubiously by redirecting military funding to the border wall, and also with his series of acting appointments not requiring Senate confirmation. Democrats have condemned all of this. They have characterized in the harshest possible terms. They have reacted to it by inventing the wildest scenarios of Trump perfidy and eagerly buying up a steady diet of books warning of Trump's fascism. It's actually a book called Fascism, a Warning. Tyranny, How Fascism Works. They've done everything, it seems, except reevaluate their own love of governance by presidential and administrative decree. Lowry continues, Kamala Harris proved it during her failed run. Her gun control plan would have, among other things, closed the so-called boyfriend loophole to keep dating partners convicted of domestic violence from buying firearms and mandated near universal background checks. Whatever you think of those measures, they would have lacked any possible basis in law because she would have just signed her yes, we can executive orders. The Des Moines Register ran a headline about a speech in Iowa she gave touting her plan. Kamala Harris, Congress would get 100 days to act on guns before she would issue executive orders, giving Congress a little more than 3 months to do whatever she wants them to do, and if they don't do it, she's going to do it anyway. In a tweet, she boasted, some will say my plan to combat gun violence is too bold. Actually, what discerning people said is that it is too illegal. Her approach to immigration was the same. She wanted to enact an enormous amnesty and give so-called dreamers a path to citizenship by rewriting immigration laws on her own, building on President Barack Obama's immigration policy through his executive orders. The idea that Congress is this accessory, nice to have around, pat him on the head, but not really necessary, you know, because she'll do whatever she wants anyway. Democrats and the press are never particularly exercised by executive overreach as long as it's something that they consider to be a good cause. So that's why, you know, you'll have Democrats, you'll have like these people on Morning Joe who say, why won't President Trump come up with a national mask mandate? I know, because he doesn't have the authority to do that. But they'll deride him on one day, you know, on Wednesday for being a fascist, and then Thursday they'll say he's incompetent because he's not doing a mandate, a national mask mandate, which he doesn't have the authority to do. That's amazing. Now he finishes the piece by saying, "Now look, Biden may not pick Harris, even if he does, she'll be second fiddle on the ticket." And to his credit, was the one who brought up the constitutional problem with her gun plan. I mean, he brought it up, right? But her attitude toward executive power is characteristic of the progressive mindset. Whatever constitutional issues the left has in response to Trump will be hastily abandoned as soon as it's an obstacle to anything significant that progressives want to do. And as that piece concludes, I want to remind you of something, which is that I don't think Joe Biden's going to make it 4 years as president. I also don't think Joe Biden's really going to be the president if he gets elected. So the idea that you'd have somebody then become president who believes that she can do whatever she wants from the Oval Office, and if Congress doesn't do what she wants, she'll just do it anyway. That makes Congress symbolic. It doesn't make Congress a functioning legislative branch of government. You realize that? I mean, just think about that for a second. Do what I want or I'll do it anyway means Congress is, it's like Parliament with the king back in the earliest days. Do what I want or I'm doing it anyway, but you can pass a resolution agreeing with me or I'm going to do it. I mean, that's not a functioning separate branch of government, you understand, right? So I would keep that in mind as you think about what a Biden presidency would look like and the kind of authoritarian, tyrannical nut jobs he would surround himself with. It terrifies me. It really does. 855-839-1210, 855-839-1210. Walt is in Cherry Hill. Walt, good morning.
Good morning, Rich. How are you? Great show. I really enjoy it. And I admire you saying that you did well.
Wait, where'd you go, Walt?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Go ahead. Sorry, you broke up. Go ahead. Say that again.
Okay, yeah. Great show. I admire your not wanting to address Biden's mental situation right now. That was very
well, I did
nice
address it. I spent a lot of time on it earlier. I think the guy's losing it, and it's sad, and it's painful to listen to.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you.
I did a whole segment on it earlier. Where the hell were you?
Where the heck were you?
Be polite.
I think they're bringing Michelle Obama into the picture because I think Mario Cuomo was their backup guy. Right. I think you killed his chances with the parodies you're doing. Maybe you'll do this. Maybe you'll do this. I think you killed his chances, so they had to bring her in. And she'd be a good candidate, given the racial tensions in the country. I mean, if you remember, it was her husband that said, if I had a son, he'd look like Trayvon Martin.
Yes.
As the guy
right.
was pounding the guy's head into a concrete sidewalk. Okay, so I think she'll be a good candidate for that. So
it'll be my fault because I've ruined Cuomo's chances with the LoveGov parody.
Yeah, that's right.
I love it. Hey, brother, have a good weekend. Thank you, my friend. I appreciate the call. Thanks, Walt. 855-839-1210. You see what I've accomplished here, Greg?
Yes.
It's fantastic.
Yes. By the way, you were saying about VP. Vegas right now has Kamala Harris as the top contender for VP. She's at minus 130, which means that you would have to bet $130 to win $100. Everybody else is in the plus category. Like Susan Rice is +225. Val Demings is next. Tammy Duckworth, Elizabeth Warren, and then Michelle Obama. Michelle Obama is like +2400. So.
So if you bet $1, you get $2400.
$100.
Oh, okay. I'm not good at math. Obviously, we know that. I'm good at politics. I'm not good at math. So, you know, got to know what your gifts are in life, right?
I just thought it was interesting to what the Vegas odds are for.
No, I appreciate that. I appreciate that. I thank you for that, Greg. It's very important for me to know the odds. By the way, let me check in on social media for a second. Thanks to our great friends at Cherry Hill Volvo. Let's see here now. Susie responding to me calling her out. I wasn't going to call you out again on your refusal to accept that Michelle Obama wants nothing to do with the White House in any official capacity, but I draw the line at the usual suspects comparison, and now I keep picturing Kevin Spacey limping around as Kaiser Sose. So that's good. Stephen, ham wrapped in bacon, where the hell were you? I love it. Sorry, I should have said, where the heck were you? I apologize for all the children in the room. Actually, no kids listen anymore because nobody's in the car. So, you know.
True.
Karen says the...
going to school.
Yeah, right. Because nobody's in school. The views on executive orders reminds me of watching the movie Chinatown. He's a tyrant. He's weak. He's a tyrant. She's my daughter. She's my sister. Yeah, it's a great analogy. And Chinatown's a great movie and one of Jack Nicholson's best. Yeah, it's like, you know, they're all over the place on this issue. And you know, one day Trump's a tyrant. The next day he's incompetent because he's not locking down the country and imposing martial law to fight the COVID-19. I mean, you can't keep up with it. And he's also a tyrant because he's not going to leave. He's incompetent because he won't impose a national mask mandate, but he's a tyrant because he won't leave the White House. This is a little montage we put together of all the people in the media who are saying that Donald Trump will never leave if he loses the election. He's going to stay inside the White House, board the place up, never leave. You're going to hear voices in here like Bill Maher, Trevor Noah, Joe Biden, Hillary Clinton, Joy Reid, John Heilman, cut 10.
That's what worries me the most about Trump. I keep saying it to everybody who will listen. He's not going to go, even when he loses, if he loses in 2020. I don't know.
He's not going to leave the building?
I don't think so.
Have you ever considered what would happen if the election result came out as you being the winner and Trump refused to leave?
Yes, I have. I promise you, I'm absolutely convinced they will escort him from the White House with great dispatch.
I fear that if he loses the election in 2020, that there will never be a peaceful transition of power.
I think it is a fair point to raise as to whether or not, if he loses, he's going to go quietly or not. And we have to be ready for that.
We face the scenario where there's a very real possibility that the president of the United States wants to have foreign interference again so that he can stay in office, so that he will not be indicted, that he doesn't have any intention of committing to a peaceful transition of power. How can we have any confidence that just an election is going to cure these constitutional abrogations?
This is how autocracies work, where leaders try to change elections or wield their power in a way to hold on to power. Power longer.
I think we were looking at potentially a trial run for a kind of a genuine attempt to through intimidation and potentially through force to try to try to steal this election.
Well, that's crazy talk, but you're allowed again to float crazy, irresponsible, fear-inducing theories if you're on MSNBC. The kook network. It's unbelievable. One day it's the vaccine will be political and it won't work. Don't take it because it's just political. The next day, Trump won't leave the White House. It's like listening to Coast all day on that station now. Aristotle on Twitter says Dems didn't think they could beat Trump. And now with COVID, they see a chance and they're trying to figure out Biden. That's a good point. He also made a good point, too. He says, how do you follow up a half-hour water test by spending 10 minutes talking about it? Good point. That was on me. And, another point I want to mention is Eric Reynolds, who says, thank you, Rich. Finally, someone has the stones to give endings to movies that everyone should have seen a decade ago.
I think we should make that a... I think we should make that a weekly feature every Friday where you just come on and give endings to movies that are over, let's just say 20 years old.
Yeah.
20 years old. I think that would be a great, great, great feature.
I love it. Let's do it. Because you know what? If you haven't seen it and it's 20 years old, it's not on me. It's not on me. I'm sorry.
We could say it's brought to you by Penn Cinemas at the markets at Huntington Valley. You know, they're doing this drive-in movie night. So let's get them to sponsor it. I think it's a great idea.
I love it. It's the spoiler moment. And you can turn off the radio if you really don't want to hear the ending to you know, Caddyshack. If that really, if that eludes you, the ending of it, really, you've been waiting. It's been on your bucket list to watch it. 855-839-1210. Let's see. Joe is on the Jersey Turnpike. Joe, good morning.
Hey, Rich, how are you doing?
Good, buddy. What's up?
Yeah, listen, I still think Michelle's going to be the pick, and here's why. It makes the most sense for her to get the popularity that Joe needs out of the black vote and the suburban women like you talked about. And that's what he needs most. She can step in and basically become president if he's incapacitated. Barack is right there as the advisor sitting in the White House, just like a Jared Kushner every day. And they've got what they wanted. They've got their whole power struggle set up in place.
Yeah. Yeah, look, I mean exactly right. It's obvious now that the Obamas still crave power, and I just don't buy the idea that she doesn't have ambition for this. I don't buy the idea that she really wants out of politics when everything she talks about is about politics every day now. She's not doing a cooking show on the Food Network.
Right. Well, right? Anyway, she's going to be like the Martha Stewart of politics. Everybody will love her.
Yeah, well, you know, you're right about that. And that's what scares me, and I don't want them to be caught off guard with this. Joe, thank you for the call, buddy. Drive safe on the turnpike. I appreciate it. I'm just saying, you know, if she was on HGTV every night doing home specials and she never brought up politics, and do you realize in the last, like, 2 weeks alone, she's bashed Trump as someone that doesn't know history and doesn't read history. She said she has low-grade depression because of the hypocrisy of the White House. She's accused the president of the mishandling of COVID, which has led to American deaths. She's talked about redistribution of wealth. That's just among, like, 100 other things political Michelle Obama has said in the last 2 weeks. So, you know, things in life, and maybe it's the Jersey in me, I just don't look at things and go, oh, well, that's just a coincidence. I look at things and go, come on, what's going on here? And look, maybe she won't be the vice presidential pick. Maybe not. But I just have this hard time believing that the Obamas don't want power again. I really, and Joe Biden is the perfect proxy for them because the guy doesn't have it all there anymore. It's not there. And you need somebody to get the black vote out. And I'm sorry, but after what he said yesterday, you know, he goes on with this thing with his dumb comments on diversity. Let me play this again for you. Unlike the black community, the Latino community is incredibly diverse. This is on with NPR, cut one.
Are you going to reengage with Cuba, though? I mean, I'm specifically wondering about, you know, the Florida
yes.
communities that are, you know,
yes.
incredibly interested in the Cuba issue and see
yes.
Status given to Venezuelans while Cubans are being deported.
The answer is yes, I'm going to engage. Yes. Yes. And by the way, what you all know, but most people don't know, unlike the African-American community, with notable exceptions, the Latino community is an incredibly diverse community with incredibly different attitudes about different things.
What the hell does that even mean?
You go to Florida, you find a very different attitude about immigration in certain places than you do when you're in Arizona. So it's a very different, a very diverse community.
Who the hell is he? David Duke? With a few exceptions, there's no diversity in the black community. What the hell is that? That's the Democrat nominee for president? And then he doubles down on it. He doubles down again in his diversity comments, suggesting that all black Americans have the same background. Cut seven.
We can build a new administration that reflects the full diversity of our nation and the full diversity of Latino communities. Now, when I mean full diversity, unlike the African-American community and many other communities, you're from everywhere, from Europe, from the tip of South America, all the way to our border in Mexico and in the Caribbean. And different backgrounds, different ethnicities, but all Latinos.
I really, honestly, have no idea how Democrats think this is okay. President Trump responded to it, by the way. He talked about Joe Biden's racial gaffe. Cut number eight.
Just watch the clip. And Joe Biden this morning totally disparaged and insulted the black community. What he said is incredible. And I don't know what's going on with him, but it was a very insulting statement he made. And I guess you'll figure that out. You'll see it in a little while. But it was a great insult to the black community.
Yeah, it really was. It really was. And after that, he definitely needs somebody who's going to get the black community excited. And Kamala Harris, the woman who put away a lot of black people in California for low-level pot crimes, that's going to be how you excite the black community? I don't think so. I really don't. I don't think so. But, you know, obviously, the odds are the odds, so we'll see what happens. 855-839-1210, 855-839-1210. Steve, good morning. You are on Talk Radio 1210. What's going on?
Hey, how you doing today, Rich?
Good. What's up?
Okay. No, I'm calling from Croatia.
Okay.
And I wanted to talk about, I listened to your podcast while I'm over here, and I was listening this morning about Como. And I can understand, you know, now what you're saying is this Como getting, well, first off, de Blasio, you know, he's downsizing the police department. You saw the riots in the city.
Right.
And they're cutting the budget. That's not smart. And I can understand why a lot of the wealthier people are looking out for their self-interest. And if you look at St. Louis, that one particular attorney, his home being overrun. Right. And then you think about, well, Como is worried about revenue. I think he's looking at 24. I really don't think he's looking at 20.
Oh, I agree.
For, you know, running for presidency.
Yeah. He's looking at 24, no doubt. He wants to be the Democrat nominee in 24, no doubt.
Yeah, and I think this would be a bad rap because a lot of the support they have depends on the support. I'm talking about the people that are obligated and the dependent sheep that the revenue, you know, covers, the votes. And that wouldn't look good, especially losing a city and bankrupting a city.
Yeah, but, no, you're exactly right. He needs that revenue, and then he needs to have that story for 2024. And that's why he keeps dodging the nursing home scandal and keeps trying to blame the president for it. He wants to be the nominee. There's no doubt in my mind.
Exactly. Exactly. Right. And I do agree with you about Michelle Obama. I do feel that it's like
there's nothing to agree with. I'm not predicting anything. I'm just saying there's just a lot of things that are very, very interesting. How's Croatia, by the way?
Oh, it's very warm. I'm taking the afternoon break. There's a 7-hour difference.
Okay.
And here they take it easier.
Look at that, Greg. We're on afternoons in Croatia now. I love it. It's going to be back an afternoon drive in Croatia. I like it. Steve, thank you for the call, buddy, and enjoy your afternoon. Have a great day. 855-839-1210. Well, speaking of the LoveGov, this is what he said regarding all those rich New Yorkers who were out in the Hamptons. He wants them back, and he needs the revenue. My last caller is exactly right, because he does want to be the nominee in 2024. This is what Cuomo said a couple days ago. Take a listen.
We used to be worried millionaires tax people might leave. No, no, no. The burden shifted. We're trying to get people to come back.
Come back.
We're trying to get them to come back.
Come back.
COVID's under control.
Come back to me.
We're going to make progress helping the homeless. We're going to clean up the graffiti. We're going
come
to fix
to
crime.
Me. I miss
On
you.
On top of that,
I need you.
You want to say, and by the way, when you come back, you're going to get a big tax increase.
I'm not
Our
doing
Our population,
that.
1% of the population pays 50% of the taxes.
Which is why I raised
the
taxes, but now it's coming back to bite me.
On the globe. I literally talk to people all day long who are now in
and
the Hamptons
go,
house.
I raised your taxes. How do you feel about it? They go, I don't like it. Keep going.
Who also lived here or in their Hudson Valley house or in their Connecticut weekend house.
And they go, you jerk.
And I say, you got to come back.
You raised my taxes.
When are you coming back?
I'm not
go to dinner.
Back.
I'll buy you a drink. Come over. I'll cook.
I'll cook for you. You're single. I'm single.
They're not coming back right now.
I'm a single dad.
And you know what else?
Single mom. I'm just saying.
If I stay there, they pay a lower income tax because they don't pay the New York City surcharge.
Which I gave them.
Which that would be a bad place if we had to
go there.
These
bad policies of mine that now I want to pretend like they're not mine. And I'll convince you of that over a nice meal of celery sticks and Chablis.
Rich, that is very unfair of you to say that a Cuomo would put in policies like this, because it's not like that they're, you know, he's a fresh face. Like, there's not the Cuomos have not been running New York City for 50 years. You know what I mean? Like, that is just not, that's not a factual statement. You know?
Right. Yeah. The idea that the Cuomos have had New York City and New York State under their control for decades, totally. He's an outsider. He just got in there, Greg. He's
really
an outsider.
Is. he's a fresh face young buck who is never been in politics and, you know, right. came in there to
did I put in these policies? No. Did my father? Yes. But the same difference.
Same thing.
Same thing.
A Cuomo definitely did this.
One thing I do know is a Cuomo did this, and that's why I want you back. And to make it up to you, if you take me back, I will cook you dinner and buy you a drink. Because I did this to you, and I want you back. I miss you. Come back to me. And you could have a drink. You could have wine. You could have beer. You could have a cocktail, perhaps vodka. You could have tonic. You could have maybe a tequila. Maybe you like gin. Maybe you like the gin. We could do something with a cider, maybe New York cider. We could do New York wine. We could do a beer. Maybe you like a beer. Perhaps you'd like a IPA or a pale ale. Or perhaps you'd like more of like a stout. Or maybe you'd like a Budweiser or whatever you'd like.
I don't think anybody drinks Budweiser.
This is now de Blasio, the idiot mayor of New York City, disagreeing with the governor again on something now. Take a listen.
To the point about the folks out in the Hamptons, I have to be very clear about this. We do not make decisions based on the wealthy few. That I was troubled to hear this concept that because wealthy people have a set of concerns about the city, that we should accommodate them, that we should build our policies and approaches around them. That's not how it works around here anymore. This city is for New Yorkers. This city is for people who live here, wow. work here, fight to make this place better, fight through this crisis. So there's a lot of New Yorkers who are wealthy, who are true believers in New York City, and will stand and fight with us. And there's some who may be fair weather friends, but they will be replaced by others. But we must build our policies around working people. And if our federal government fails us and doesn't provide stimulus, we should immediately return in Albany to the discussion of a tax on wealthy New Yorkers. Because as we see from the stock market, while everyone else is suffering, the rich are getting richer. And it's time to look that in the face and say, you know what, wealthy New Yorkers can afford to pay a little bit more so that everyone else can make it through this crisis. That's where this conversation should be centered.
And this conversation ends wow. here because I don't want to tax them anymore because I want to become president one day, you moron. So let me make this clear to you. You can come to Albany, but I won't be there. I'll be hiking at Buttermilk Falls State Park in the Finger Lakes, or perhaps I'll go up to the Adirondacks. I don't know. Or maybe the Catskills. Maybe Lake Placid or Tupper Lake or Saragon or Seneca or any of our other beautiful. Lakes.
Beautiful.
Let me list all of them for you right now.
No, we don't need a list of all of them.
But I
we
will not be there to entertain you because you giant dope.
Oh, no.
With your paintings in the streets, which are not like my paintings of mountains, you're not welcome in Albany. You can come there, but I just won't be there because I'll be with the wealthy New Yorkers on the Hamptons. It's amazing.
In a battle of de Blasio and Cuomo, Rich, did you ever think for the life of you, you'd be siding with Cuomo?
Yeah, right. That's the thing. It's like these you wind up going, well, I got to go with the governor on this one because he's right. People are leaving because of the high taxes,
yes.
de Blasio. And de Blasio is acting like, no, the people that want to pay, and we're going to make them pay more, and they'll do it because they love New York City. They'll suck it up and do it because they yep. love New York. And Cuomo's going, no, I mean, I might love her, but I can't be with her. And no, so yes. I have to say goodbye. Because I can't afford you anymore. You're very high maintenance and you're very expensive and I just can't afford that lifestyle. So do I want the lifestyle? Of course I do, but I can't afford it.
By
and if
way,
you come to me in Albany, oh no. I'll be probably, maybe I'll be, I don't know, maybe I'll be skiing in the Adirondacks, or perhaps I'll be apple picking in the Hudson Valley. Maybe I'll be in Warwick having some cider. Maybe I'll be in Seneca having wine tastings. I don't know.
I forgot that he's long-winded. Sorry.
The battle of Cuomo versus de Blasio is an epic exposure into just the absurdity of these policies. I mean, Cuomo raised the taxes on the rich, and now he regrets it. And de Blasio goes, we got to raise them even more. Oh, man.
By the way, not in that clip, but Cuomo's 100% right that he says that 1% that these guys are talking about pay 50% of the New York City income tax. So like that's a huge, that's a, like, you can't tax them out of New York. Like it's right. just not feasible.
No, and they're leaving in droves because they don't want to pay it. And yes. de Blasio, what's his answer? Tax them more.
More.
Because that'll get them to stay. What?
We know you're not paying. We know you're not paying it now, but please come back so you can pay it more.
Right, exactly. Yeah, we know you're not paying now. You left because it's too much, but come back and we're going to raise it. But come back because it's the right you because you believe in New York City. That's why you should come back and be willing to pay more money. And the policies are absolutely amazing. Very quickly, Mark is in the Northeast. Mark, go ahead.
Yeah. Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I do want to say here, having grown up in New York and having hated his father, Mario Cuomo, living under his regime, and having always trash-talked his father, after having listened to his son for the last 6 years, I have to apologize to his father. I owe Mario an apology. I'm sorry, Mario.
It's understandable. It's understandable. Even Bob Grant, rest his soul, would be owing Mario an apology right about now, you know?
As condescending as Mario was, you know, his father was still a gentleman compared to Andrew.
So you're saying Andrew would be the lesser governor of the Cuomos?
Oh, he's still the lesser. So where does that leave Chris? I don't know here. Maybe we'll have to send him off to Vegas to learn the casino business. I don't know.
But, thank you, Mark. Appreciate it. Have a great weekend. All right. When we get back, I got to tell you the latest that's going on now. Again, Biden and the cognitive decline. It's bad. It's really bad. Oh, man, I just don't see it. And Governor Tom Wolf of Pennsylvania says no sports for kids. Thank God Dawn's away right now because she'd be losing her mind today. But look, if you want sports in your life, professional sports, thank God that's back, right? And FanDuel, our sponsor this hour of Nonstop Talk, they're going to make the games even more fun for you with their incredible odds. People love FanDuel because the app is easy to use and they are America's number one sports app for a reason in partnership with Valley Forge Casino. So whether you want to bet on the NBA, PGA, baseball, you got the PGA Championship this weekend. Well, FanDuel Sports will give you your first bet risk-free. That's right. Just place any bet you want, get up to $500 back if you don't win. So go to FanDuel.com/rich. That's my name, R-I-C-H. Get started so they know I sent you. FanDuel.com/rich. And you'll have fun because sports are back and FanDuel gets your winnings fast and they make it easy with this first risk-free bet. FanDuel.com/rich. Now, you must be 21 or older, present in New Jersey or Pennsylvania. First online real money wager only. See sportsbook.fanduel.com for terms and restrictions. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Talk Radio 1210 WPHD. Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.